Hey there, welcome to the Collide Podcast. This is Willow Weston, and I am in the Collide recording room. I just got to sit down with Jelana Goble, who's a speaker, author, and foster care advocate. She has started and founded the initiative Every Child Organ, and she has five children that she's either fostered, adopted, or bioed. I don't even know if that's a word, bioed. It's a word for me. I bioed my kids. Anyways, had an amazing conversation with her. I am telling you, I am so inspired by the way that the Lord shows up in a woman's life and gets a hold of her and plants this passion inside of her. And watch out when a woman says yes to a calling and follows her passion and her heart and what the Lord wants to do through her life. Listen to this woman's story. Jelana, so fun to have you on today. I have so many things I want to ask you, but when I sort of stalked your life to find out what you're up to, I mean, heck, you're a speaker, an author, a foster care advocate, you're married, and you have five children that range from preteen to young adults. So I'm just wondering, like, man, it's only 12:13. What have you already done today? Because it seems like your life has a jillion roles.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. I've never started off a podcast with like, account for your hours since you woke up. Okay, well, if you must know, my high school son injured his collarbone. So I started the day at a pediatric orthopedist appointment. Thankfully, we don't have to have surgery at this point. So that was good news. Then I ran into a store to grab something that I needed. Then I took one of my kids on a driving lesson to practice merging onto the freeway. Then I grabbed some lunch and now I am with you.
I just had to ask you that because it's like a day in the life of a lady who does so much stuff. I'm glad that you're alive and well and you could be on this podcast, because isn't teaching teenagers how to drive one of the scariest things you've ever done in your life?
It's something. All right. It's something. And, you know, this is my second time going through it. And it's just interesting how our kids' God-given personalities come into play with like how confident or how nervous they are, right? I've had one that was a little too nervous and then one that was a little overly confident. And I was like, oh man, if I could only merge them together. Right.
Yes. I have two kids. One was overly confident and one was, as you say, underconfident. Yeah. And I used to get so upset with my overly confident child because I actually felt like pride was going to be the thing that was going to be so right. dangerous. And so there were a few times where we'd be driving through a neighborhood and he would just be unteachable in his overly confident state. And so I would literally say, that's it. You will stop the car right now. Pull over. I'm driving. Until you can be humble, you will not drive this car. And he's like, Mom, Mom. And I'm like, no, I'm serious. And so we laugh about it now, because that was years ago that I got psycho and like would make him, you know, get out of the car because he wasn't humble.
I mean, it's a big responsibility. You got to be in the right mindset. So,
yeah. Holy cow. Well, good for you. I love that so much. You have become a foster parent advocate, and you started a movement called Every Child Organ, as well as written a few books for perspective on foster parenting. Can you invite us into how you got so passionate about this?
Yes, I would love to, Willow. So we're going to travel back in time to good old like 1999 when I graduated from college and went to an orphanage to teach for a little bit of time. And that was really where the Lord began to kind of cultivate my heart for vulnerable kids. In 2000, I married my husband, Luke. We actually went back down to live in Guatemala for my husband to go to language school. And then on the weekends, we went back to that same orphanage that I had lived at the year prior to offer respite to the house parents there that just needed a break. That was really where God began to kind of cultivate our hearts for vulnerable kids. And after a time of living in Guatemala, we were on the plane returning to the States and said, well, where are the vulnerable children here? And it was that question, Willow, that really led us straight to the doors of foster care. To my knowledge, I didn't grow up with anyone that I knew personally that was impacted by foster care, either in the system or foster parenting. But, you know, I quickly learned that if you kind of go upstream from any hot button social issue like homelessness, domestic violence, incarceration, untreated mental illness, and you ask, where do the children go when their parents are suffering acutely with these things? Where do they end up if they don't have anyone that is safe and healthy in their own natural network that can care for their kids while they work on getting safe and healthy themselves? And the answer is really not a mystery. The answer is foster care. So at the ripe old age of 25, with zero parenting experience, I always joke about this, so what could ever go wrong?
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, whoa, you got a passion for this before
you even exactly. It was like trial by fire. And so my husband and I signed up and we just thought, oh, we'll just do respite, like babysitting for other people. And then of course, you know, they were like, you know what you'd be really great at, which is therapeutic foster parenting, which is often, you know, kids whose trauma is expressed in like pretty high behavioral needs. So we just really dove in the deep end and realized like there was no such thing as kind of like easing into the pool for us with foster parenting. It was like a helicopter drop in the middle of the ocean. So that really shaped us pretty significantly. So we started fostering before we had biological children. We did foster care, biological children, adoption in that order. So we were foster parents for nearly 20 years before we let our certification lapse, which was in the midst of the pandemic. But it has greatly shaped our parenting journey.
So you travel to Guatemala, you get a heart for kids who don't have parents. You said you worked with orphans. You came over here, you started asking bigger questions, and you started fostering. Just fostering one kid is a lot. Like, that's just, it's a lot. It's a lot of sacrifice. It's a lot of work. It requires a lot of things. What made you not stop there?
Well, our first placement actually was two kids together. It was a sibling set of 15. And we learned in the class, Willow, that like it's best practice for kids to be placed together. And so we were really humbled to receive these brothers. But it was a very humbling experience. Like foster care, foster parenting specifically, very quickly kind of bankrupted me of my own perceived self-sufficiency and really invited me to like lean into God in new ways that I really hadn't had to previously. It was very humbling. We could not keep both of the boys safe together. So despite everybody saying like best practice for the boys to be together, the older child actually had to leave our home so that we keep the younger one safe. And so right away in my fostering journey, I kind of felt like a failure. Like, okay, so here's best practice and I couldn't do it. And you know, so much of this has everything to do with what these kids have experienced before they ever walk through your front door. But still, I wanted to do such a good job. And right off the bat, like we were working with a significantly less than ideal experience. And I think a very compelling argument can be made that any child that is actually in foster care has already endured a lot of less than ideal childhood experiences. But like, this was the time I wanted these brothers to stay together. And so right from the very beginning, I felt like we were confronted with like, this is not about us. This is not about us like trying to turn the story around. This is really an invitation to love and to love well. And when I say that, I don't mean like, it's just about love. Like that's, it is so much about love, but we also have to like know what we're doing when we're engaging with kids with trauma. So we need to do our homework on that and recognize, I was invited to recognize in many ways that it would bring stuff up for me in my own life as I was parenting kids with, you know, really vulnerable, coming from really vulnerable, hard places. But it definitely shaped me. And one of the biggest ways that it shaped me is oftentimes in foster parenting, Willow, people talk about like seeds planted. And for a long time, I just thought, well, that's true, but that's a little bit of a cheesy, cliche thing to say. And oftentimes we say those things because we've poured into a child and then that child has moved on either back with their biological family or maybe to adoption or guardianship. And we just don't know the rest of the story. But with that little boy who stayed with me for a year, with the brother that we were able to keep safe and live with us for a year, a variety of things happened. It's told in my book, A Love Stretched Life. So I won't get into the details, but essentially there was an abrupt ending to our contact when he was in second grade. And we had zero contact until 7 years ago when he was a 19-year-old young man. I reached out to him on social media. I found him. He had an unusual name. And boom, there he was. And it really looked from his pictures that maybe life hadn't treated him kindly. He was, you know, flipping off the camera. He had red bloodshot eyes. He was holding a bottle of hard alcohol. And it was like, oh dear. So I really do believe this is the same little boy that we had the privilege of welcoming in when he was in first grade. So I wrote to him and it's like, what do you say? But I really felt this like Holy Spirit prompting to just like find him that time, you know, write to him. Mm-hmm. And I just said, Royal. You, which I have permission to use everybody's name that I'm going to mention in the podcast. It's important for people to know, for me, for people to know that I have permission to use their names. So I just said, Royal, you've been so strongly in my mind tonight, and I don't know if you remember us. It's really cool if you don't. You know, I was trying to backpedal, make him feel comfortable, not seem like I know exactly who you are. I haven't talked to you in 13 years, but here we are. But I just said, I remember you as a sweet little boy that had like way too much adult stuff on his plate to deal with. And I remember taking you to California and going to Disneyland and baking brownies and riding your first bike. And I have no idea if you remember us or not, but I just wanted to say that I've always had your summer birthday circled on our calendar and I still have pictures of you up and I hope that life has treated you well. And he responded the next day with OMG with about 10 exclamation points. I've been searching for you my whole life. You're still ... my mom, which he had never called me. He'd always just referred to me as Miss Delana. There was no child in the house calling me anything other than that. That was fine. I didn't have any expectations of being called mom. So it really stood out to me when after this 13-year no communication, he's like, you're still my mom. So life is messy and this isn't a Hallmark story, right? There've been a lot of ups and downs and a lot of twists and turns, but at the end of the day, Willow, that cliche about seeds planted has actually become very true to me about what God can do. Sometimes we pour in and we pour in and we pour in and we really don't know the outcome. We have to release. We're forced to release. And that has been such a powerful example to me to be called his mom. He has three kids to be called their Nana. He and his significant other actually moved out to Portland for a time to give it a go, you know, being family together in close proximity. And we talk on a weekly basis now. So it's a very crazy, impactful story to me that this was our very first child that we welcomed in foster care. Spent a lifetime, spent almost his whole childhood apart, and we now count him as our oldest. And there is so much more to the story that I could tell you about a lot of twists and turns that happen when children are left bouncing in a really overwhelmed, dysfunctional system and all that happens when they're not tethered to one caring adult. However, there's a tethered connection now. And quite honestly, when he was placed with us in foster care in first grade, he had no choice. But he has a choice now of who he's connected with and how often he's connected. And so I just count that as one of the biggest privileges of my life to see God make this a full circle moment.
It's such a powerful story, especially for kids who have attachment issues, and rightly so, that he would have felt such a strong connection to you that he would label you as mom. What do you think you and your husband provided for him or gave to him that helped create that connection?
Well, I think that's just part of embracing the mystery of it because honestly, Willow, he looks back and he says things like, Mom, remember that time that we sat around and had grilled cheese? Well, I don't know about you, but that's not like a big milestone moment, right? Well, remember at the time we had people over to watch football and we ate chip and dip? You know, I honestly thought that he would say, like, remember the time we went to Disneyland, because we literally went there. But honestly, a lot of the recall was more of these like ordinary moments. Remember my Spider-Man lunchbox? Remember my scooter? Remember playing with Jimmy, the next door neighbor? And so I think for me, it just impresses on me. Sometimes we think it's these bigger like Kodak moments that our kids are going to remember. But honestly, I think there's a lot of stability and a lot of joy found in just kind of the mundane and the ordinary. And that's often what I've pulled from just hearing Royal's reflections on his 1 year spent with us. And admittedly, 1 year is not a lot to hang your hat on, right? To be like, let's give it a go. Let's become family. But it's more than what he had with anyone else. And we were not only willing, but we were joy-filled to have the privilege of reconnecting. And so it continues to be an ever-unfolding story. And it's not all sunshine and roses, as no story is. And yet it has been just a true blessing. And I don't say that word lightly. It's been a true blessing to just be reconnected with him.
The power of giving someone stability and security and safety is, I don't think people who haven't experienced it understand it. I know even from my own story, I wasn't a foster kid, but I had to find a place to live when I was 15 years old. And a distant aunt and uncle took me in across the state. And I remember one night I heard a noise and I woke up and completely was panicking in my bedroom. And I realized that I didn't have to be scared about what was about to happen to me, because I reminded myself I was in a safe place. I was in a secure place. I was in a place where no one was going to hurt me. And all that was the wind that made the screen door just shut really loud. But it triggered me and really helped me realize, when I was about 17 or 18 years old, wow, I was used to living always waiting for something terrible to happen to me. So I think when people like my aunt and uncle and people like you come alongside a kid and provide, even if it's, if it can only be for a time, it's so impactful that it doesn't surprise me that the thing he remembers is the grilled cheese sandwiches and the lunch pails, right? It's such a powerful story. There's so many questions I want to ask you, and you sort of mentioned this, but it was a question that I wrote down knowing I was going to interview you, which is, as you began to invite foster kids into your home and you wanted to love on them, what did this sort of peak in you as far as your own childhood experience, whether good or bad?
Well, I think very quickly you are confronted with the invitation as a foster parent is, yes, we want to love our kids well. We want to provide structure. We want to provide experiences. We want them to feel safe and secure. But trauma really is a game changer. And the way that we approach kids that have a background of trauma is not the same way you might approach your neurotypical biological child who has only ever known, like, felt love and safety from the minute that they were born. And so I think for me, there's been a lot of relearning along the way. It's definitely made me bump up against like those own unspoken expectations of what constitutes a good parent, right? In terms for my own self, you know, like, oh no, good parents have kids that might act like this, this, and this. And then you realize when you start peeling away those layers, at least I did, that a lot of those are just kind of like behavioral societal expectations, really not having to do with like, is your child connected to you? Do they trust you? And so I think foster parenting is an invitation to say, you know, my connection to this child is the connection is more important than like the behavioral outcome at this moment. And I know for those that haven't lived it, that might sound like a little bit wonky. Like, wait, what? Like, we want to set up our kids well to behave in a way that society approves of so that they can be seen in a certain light. And I say, Absolutely. Yes, we do. And also for some kids, they're not starting there. They're starting at such a different, you know, life has handed them such a different starting line that we need to be humble about the mountain of experiences that these kids have had that we have not had. And we need to remain open to like, how is the best way to love them well with structure and consistency. But also for me as a parent, if I had to sum it up, I'd say foster parenting has really invited me to kind of say anything that's not majoring in the majors, we can kind of let that go as like a fluffy, nice extra. But we need to major in the majors, which is feeling safe, feeling secure, being as regulated as possible. And it's through those things that the child can begin to rebuild their life and rebuild secure attachments.
Can you help those of us who are pretty unfamiliar with the need understand what the need is, as far as you mentioned, if you work your way upstream to people who are incarcerated, people who have lost everything, you listed all of these things. Where does that leave us? Like, how many kids are out there needing someone like you to say, I will provide a kid consistency and security? For those of us who have no sense, we don't mm-hmm. know. Is it 100 kids in Oregon? Is it, or maybe you know a national number? I know you're from Oregon and your organization is helping kids in Oregon, but help us understand what is the actual need we're looking at here.
So in my specific county, Willow, which is Multnomah County, Multnomah County is part of Portland along with two other counties, there are currently 681 children in foster care. That's just one of three counties. When you combine the other counties, it's well over 1,000, and there are a little under 6,000 kids in foster care in Oregon. We have a population of about 4 million. I think Washington has a significantly higher population, so your kids in care are probably higher than that. I think the fact remains, and again, I am sharing this not in any sort of like arm twisting guilty way, but I think the common denominator in most communities is that there are more children in foster care needing a safe place to go than there are homes providing that safe place for them to go. And so really the ideal scenario, Willow, would be to say, okay, what if we had the ideal scenario? What would that look like? Well, it would look like a waiting list of families and, you know, willing to take different kids, different ages, different demographics, all of that. So that when a child comes into care, the agency that's caring for that child can say, okay, look at what Johnny and Sarah need. Who is a family that has a strategic match, that can match their kind of strengths and struggles in a unique way, and let's intentionally pair them together? That would be ideal. It would be ideal for the family because they're not risking burnout. It would be ideal for the child because hopefully they could get to one place and stay in that one place until the next place that they're going, whether it's back with their parents when their parents get safe and healthy again, or onto a guardianship or adoption situation. Unfortunately, what happens, we are so far from that ideal. And so what happens when Johnny and Sarah come into care is that the agency is scrambling from the very beginning. Who can take Johnny and Sarah? Who can take Johnny and Sarah? And instead of it being a strategic match, oftentimes, though everybody wants it to be a strategic match, they're often looking to pair a child with a roof over that child's head. And so it's not a strategic match. And so what happens is we're burning out foster parents because it's not a strategic match, or they can say yes to Johnny and Sarah for a short amount of time, but then Johnny and Sarah are bouncing on the train, and that unspoken message to them is not the message we want to be showering over them as a community, right? Which is like, this isn't your fault. It's not your fault that your parents struggles in this way. It's not your fault that your dad's in jail. It's not your fault that your mom has an untreated mental illness. It's not your fault that these things happen to you. But instead, the message that kids often internalize when they're bouncing around is, nobody wants me. This is my fault. And so, again, I don't share that and to be you know, guilt-inducing in any way, but to just say there are places for people to plug in, even if it's not foster parenting per se and not swinging wide open your front door to welcome children. There are other things that you can do, but there will always be a need for more people to actually step up and welcome children in through their front door. And it is transformative. And I would say one of the things my husband said early on in our fostering journey, which has been like an anchor for us, is that our calling is to love. And with that is the caveat of like, we need to do our own homework. We need to be trauma informed. We need to, you know, understand trauma. We need to understand our own backgrounds and how that might collide with a child with trauma, all of that. But our calling is to love, not necessarily succeed. And that's a tough one. Because we all want to say, hey, if I'm going to do this, I want to have like a rags to riches story, or I want to have a story of this like overcomer that just goes on to soar because of what I have given this child. And the reality is the privilege of foster parenting means we get to welcome and we get to sit alongside and we get to hold these hard things and we get to try to provide stability as best we can, but we have to release the outcome. That it's really not up to us whether this child is going to be this amazing overcomer. We rejoice every time we see that happen. But so oftentimes, Willow, the story that we're invited to as foster parents is something has gone terribly awry in this child's story to the point where they cannot live with their parent or guardian to begin with. So let's not be shocked and surprised if hard things continue to evolve in that child's story. That's not a mark of failure on us. That's just continuing to like love well and stand in the gap and root and hope for. Sometimes we hope up close. Sometimes we have to hope from afar, but we are constantly hoping. We're constantly hoping and we're doing what we can to advocate and we're using our voice and all of those things. And yet I think sometimes just that very premise of like, well, it could continue to be hard scares people off from fostering in the first place because we want to see those success stories.
One of our favorite things around here at Collide is hosting conferences just for you. These one-night events gather together women of all ages, stages, and faith backgrounds for an incredible night of inspiration and encouragement. Attending a Collide conference is a unique experience that women walk away from feeling refreshed, energized, hopeful, and changed. So check out the link in the show notes for more information on our upcoming events and grab your ticket today to join us for an impactful night.
You know, it's really interesting to listen to you talk. Even, you know, you bring up the rags to riches and the immediate story I think of is Annie, which is funny. The movie, the musical, whatever. But I think what you're inviting us to is really an invitation to love and advocate for a kid who has had a hard story they didn't ask for. And you're kind of tempering these high expectations that it's going to have a specific outcome because I think a lot of people go into it feeling unequipped, and then while they're doing it, they might be measuring how good they are at it based on a child's behavior. Mm-hmm. And you're inviting us to not do that. And I think that feels so healthy. I hope that people can hear from a voice like you before they say yes to these opportunities so that they can go into it with really realistic expectations and not measure the outcome and determine that they're not fit for the advocacy and for the role.
Totally, absolutely. And one more comment. You know, I know I'm the one that initially said rags to riches. What's really interesting too, I have seen over and over and over again, kids that might come from, for example, a family of 10 living in a 2-bedroom apartment, right? With no yard, going into foster families that have a lovely home in the suburbs with green grassy lawn and a pool and a play structure. And those things, though it's lovely to offer those things, kids love their parents and want to be with them. So it's really not like, what am I offering materially to these kids? It's just this recognition of like, yes, it's lovely to be able to offer kids what we have to share that, whatever that might be. But I think sometimes people erroneously assume, wow, this is going to be really hard for them to be exposed to X, Y, and Z, and then go back to this. But to recognize, like, kids love their parents and they genuinely want to be with them. Sometimes there's some real things to work through. Sometimes they might be scared of what they've experienced, but they're, that love, for the most part, I've seen it with my own eyes and heard it with my own ears, is still there. And so I think that can also be surprising to people, is to recognize, you know, it's really less about tangibly what's offered and more about the heart with which, you know, it's offered. And
if there's someone listening right now who is hearing the need, hearing your story, and they're thinking, wow, I would love to be able to help. Maybe they're sensing a passion within them, but they're thinking, oh no, I'm so unequipped. I wouldn't know how to do that. What would you want to say to them?
I would share that one of the best ways, well, first of all, I've yet to meet a foster parent that feels super confident and equipped going in. I think that it's good to be humble about, like, maybe I'm not sure about this thing, but I'm going to, you know, take the certification classes anyway to just start walking that direction. I think one of the best things to do, Willow, is to seek out foster parents in your community, in your neighborhood, in your church, if you have one, to just say, who are the people that are really doing this and how can I come alongside them? Doesn't have to be super crazy. It could be dropping off a coffee. It could be, you know, bringing a meal, but just beginning to, like, learn what is the real life experience of a foster parent. Because I think oftentimes we have an idea of what something's like, and then there's a lived reality and there's a gap. So I think the more people can do to just get a little closer so that the gap isn't so wide when you step into it, the better. So who are the people that are fostering in your community? If you don't know anyone, there's plenty of agencies that you can call and say, how can I plug in to some of the ways that your agency is supporting foster families, and learn. I know here in Oregon, we have something called Foster Parents Night Out, which is a monthly respite opportunity for foster parents to drop their kids off in a safe place and have caring, fingerprinted back volunteers watch them so that they can do what they need to do and focus on themselves for those 4 hours. So there's a lot of volunteer opportunities, and that's a great way to kind of test the waters. Whether your end game is fostering or not, you know, I think the biggest thing is just trying to change the paradigm. So it's not like, well, you can foster or you can do nothing, right? I think we have to say, no, there's a lot of middle ways that people can begin to get involved and offer what they feel like they have to offer. And I really do believe that oftentimes it's a lot of smaller things that collectively add up to, like, a bigger offering. And so that's what I would say. I also, you know, wrote a book called No Sugarcoating, Coffee Talk You Need About Foster Parenting. There is a free audiobook, which I'll be sure and get to you, Willow, if you want to include it in the notes. But that's a free audiobook specifically written for people that are discerning about, like, here are the ways that should you choose to go into foster parenting, this will kind of give you the bullet points of what to consider in terms of how foster parenting is going to both practically and emotionally shift your family landscape. Questions like, how do I work with the bio parents? How do I work with the agency? How will this affect my kids? For those that are married, can I do this as a single person? How will this affect my marriage? Those types of questions are answered in this, like, 1 hour audiobook. And I would love to give you the link so that you can include that for your listeners.
I love that so much. It's so interesting to me that when you were a young adult, you went to another country to serve, and how God had in mind so much more than just that one trip. And you haven't stopped. You know, you've fostered kids, you started Every Child Oregon, you've written 2 books. I'm curious, because I know that you are a Christ follower. What is it about Jesus that you're taking cues from to have a heart for kids in need?
You know, our family life verse is Micah 6:8 about do justice, love mercy, walk humbly. And I feel like that just kind of has been our family invitation on the road to fostering. I think fostering has been the biggest chiseling tool of discipleship in my life, because it's really brought me to the end of myself. And it's also not a story, Willow, that I am the driver of the story. You know, so oftentimes it's about us and like, what do we want to do and the choices we want to make? But really, you're welcoming a child in for an unspecified amount of time, most times. And really, what happens to that child, the timeline, where they go, when they go there, it's not dependent on you. It's dependent on the work that their biological parents are going to do to work whatever plan was put in place for them. It's usually a safety plan that mitigates whatever the specific risk was that initially drew them to be child welfare involved in the first place. So it's just kind of like living this choose your own adventure, right? So I feel like we have just, it's just been continual invitation after invitation to recognize like we're not the driver of this story. And that has given us plenty of opportunity to just look to God and to just recognize that at the end of the day, we're the ones that are kind of holding this tension and just trying to stand in the gap well. One of the biggest discipleship tools has been having a 15 plus year relationship with one of my children that I fostered and later adopted. His beautiful birth mom's name is Jennifer, and we are two Portland moms that live an hour apart. And it's a longer story, and it's told in my book, A Love Stretch Life, but the kind of 1 minute overview of the last 15 years is this. I met Jennifer walking into juvenile court in Portland, Oregon. She grew up as a foster child. This was her third baby. She was 3 for 3 with having all of her kids' child welfare involved. We started fostering Micah. The older two were living with their biological father and didn't need a foster home at that moment. And we fostered him for many years. During that time, I was given permission to supervise Jennifer's visits with her baby. So I was able to see up close and personal that this really wasn't about love. This was about a toxic codependent relationship with an unhealthy individual and meth abuse. And was able to just see that she loved her child and would kind of bob up and down the waves of addiction and codependency. And eventually the plan was changed to adoption. And Jennifer and I, it's a very long story, but we remained in relationship. She actually had another child with the same man. We fostered him. We returned him. She started going to church with us. She would come over for Sunday lunches. She relapsed when he was 5 years old. So we returned him. We became relative providers again. You know, we were now like considered relatives to Jennifer because we had adopted her third child and these boys are full biological siblings. But we returned that baby to her 8 years ago, and she's been clean and sober ever since. And she's in her early 40s. I'm in my late 40s. There's not a ton of difference between us, but we've spent like a lifetime of experiences apart. And it's been so humbling for me to recognize that there's really, it's so tempting to want to write people off and to say like they're too far gone. And yet I remember at this pivotal moment in our story, Willow, where I passed this old faded church kiosk. And it just said, as long as there's breath, there's hope. And I really had to question, as a Christian, do I really believe that that's true? Does that apply to the mom who grew up in foster care? She's now 4 for 4 for having all of her kids' child welfare involved. Like, is there really hope here? And it's just been a beautiful unfolding, messy unfolding, but beautiful unfolding to see that, yes, that actually is true, that as long as there's breath, there's hope. Even when it seems like all odds are stacked against us, even when it seems like it's kind of stupid to even believe that that could be true. Like, yes, we want to believe it's true. That's a cutesy thing to say, but not for this person, not for this situation. As long as there's breath, there's hope. But Jennifer and I have been privileged since A Love Stretch Life came out. We share our story with Oregon State caseworkers on a monthly basis. And we have been invited to share our collective story on main stages at different parenting and foster and adoptive conferences, women's conferences, in different places like Arkansas and Washington and Ohio and Chicago. And it's just been this crazy unfolding of this never say never. And when you ask about like, how have I seen Jesus? I feel like Jennifer's kinship with me has been such a tool of discipleship for me. And I think oftentimes people look and they are tempted to say, look, Jelana, look what you've done for her. And I just want to tip that on its head and say, look what she's done for me, because I'm not the same person I was before I met her. Before I met her, I was somebody that oversimplified hard things to fit into my own narrow paradigm of what I'd experienced, right? Like, well, just stop using drugs and choose your kids, something like that, which on one hand, I want to be like, okay, that is a sign, you know, that is a step towards health, right? But not in kind of that edgy way of saying it, to just say, wow, if I had lived your life, there's actually a darn good chance I might be standing where you now stood. So what does it look like to root for you? What does it look like to hold in my hand the reality of what you've experienced, but also honor the ways that you're taking steps towards health? And honestly, Jennifer's sobriety for the last 8 years has been such a deep encouragement to me, because I get to see her every day waking up and making that tenacious choice to keep loving the son that she still does have by being a clean and sober mom. And she's a darn good mom. And she's the mom that I always knew she could be, that I got sneak peeks of. And so we have this kind of untraditional blended family. She comes over quite a bit. A lot of people are like, oh man, this brings up so many questions. How's your son with her? And how, you know, what does he call her? And all these things. And we've just been able to make it work. And I want to make it very clear, we're not co-parenting, but she is a cherished person in our family. And we've worked really hard to walk out the story for which we both did not have a textbook, other than just continuing to have a posture that's turned towards one another and not away. And so when you ask about like, how has God shown up in my story? I feel like God oftentimes shows up and reveals himself through people around us. And that is how I feel like God has helped to chisel me, is through this really foundational relationship with a person that, quite honestly, I would have been scared of just looking at who they were on a piece of paper without having the privilege of exchanging eye contact and a little bit of conversation, which led to the next thing, which led to the next thing, which led to us being 15 years in to a pretty unprecedented relationship. And so Jennifer and I really have a heart, which is why we speak together, to say our story is unusual and relationships do take two, and not every relationship is supposed to look like ours. And yet, what is the invitation for others, you know, between a foster parent and a child welfare involved parent, between an adoptive parent and a parent who has lost their child to adoption? What does it look like to kind of have a posture of being turned towards one another and being open to the story that God may be writing?
I was just going to say, it sounds like you have entered into a space where you're allowing God to write the story. And when we do that, we get to live our best lives and help others live theirs. And so it's very inspiring to hear your story, Jelana. And I know that there are going to be people listening to this who want to hear more from you. So how can they do that?
Well, you can go to jelanagoble.com. My book, No Sugar Coating, if you want the physical copy of that book, it is available on Amazon, but I would recommend that you just do the free audio download that I know you'll have in your show notes. But A Love Stretch Life is available really any place books are sold, but also on Amazon and on my website. You can find me on Instagram, Jelana Goble Author, on Facebook. I love engaging with folks. So if people actually decide to pick up the book or listen to it on Audible and want to reach out, I'm pretty responsive to engaging with readers and listeners. So I'd love to hear from you.
Love it. Thank you so much,
Thank Jelana. You. Thanks for having me.
Friend, I hope that Jelana's story inspired you wherever you're at, whether God is calling you to take part in helping foster kids or if he has planted something in you that he wants you to do. you don't have to start huge. You can start right where you are with what he has given you right now. If you need a reminder of that, I actually wrote a Bible study called Yes You, and it's all about how God uses what you have right now. He doesn't need you to go out and get anything else. He can use what you have right now to do amazing things in this world. And isn't her story just a reminder of that being true? I absolutely loved hearing it, and I hope you did too. If you want our podcast to show up in your inbox every week so you have ways that you can grow in your faith and collide with Jesus while you're on your commute or you're in your kitchen cooking or you're on that dreaded treadmill, make sure that you subscribe to our podcast on all the places podcasts are available. We are there. I hope you have a fantastic day. Keep gliding, and we'll catch you next week.